The weekly long box is brought to you by Bake Me a Wish. Don't waste money sending flowers. Send a cake instead. Bake Me a Wish Gourmet is a New York bakery specializing in delivering gift cakes for the holidays and birthdays overnight all over the USA. Visit them today at bakemeawish.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 55 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined each and every week, as always, by Todd. Todd, how you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
That's what I like to hear. I'm doing good, too, recovering from the hectic weekend.
I heard you were jet-setting again this weekend.
No, it was just a Philly, just a, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump from where the Philly con is. And actually, we'll talk about the con locally that's happening this weekend, but, I attempted to get all my Christmas shopping done this weekend, and it literally sapped the life out of me.
Mm. I can imagine carrying that huge present for me would really tire you out.
Well, that's the thing. You know, like, it's more or less, like, gotta get the big stuff done for, like, you know, all the kids, and, you know, April's gift is already done, my wife. But and again, this is the scam I pull every year. And this is for our listeners. This is a helpful shopping tip.
Ooh, write it down. Get your pen and paper ready.
Right. First of all, if you're not listening to the show and already taking copious notes, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to put this in a separate notebook. Like, one notebook is, you know, notes for Weekly Long Box. Other is Leonard's Wit and Wisdom.
Mm.
Separate book, volume 4, probably by now.
Oh, at least.
No. So December 1st every year, I go on Amazon, and I get their free month trial of Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Amazon Prime, if you're not aware, it's much, much bigger than it used to be. It just used to be simply, like, you pay a subscription fee, and for, you know, every month you pay a subscription fee, and it's free two-day shipping on, like, pretty much everything that they have.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they offer it the first month to you for free. And then, you know, when the month's over, you just choose not to sign up for it, of course. This is my sixth year of doing it and getting the month for free.
Ooh.
I just do it every December. So if something comes up, it's like, oh, somebody needs a gift, or somebody forgot something, or we need to get something for somebody else. I have my Amazon Prime, I can get it, and, you know, since where we live in Pennsylvania, Todd and I were relatively close to a hub, so sometimes, depending on when the order is placed, that 2 days can sometimes be like a day.
Yeah. Yes. So you're ahead of the game. You're all ready to go. You got those last minute, you know, preparations in case things melt down for you.
Yeah, that's right. Most of the stuff has already trickled in through the mail. It just needs to be wrapped, and that's my wife's job. There's a delicate way I can say this, but I'm not really sure how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But when I wrap a gift, you can certainly tell it was wrapped by someone with the style and the grace in the hands of a surgeon like myself.
Uh-huh. You should someday ask Dave at the shop about my legendary wrapping. Everything is in the same thing I keep my Conans in. It's a brown paper bag. I just get a brown paper bag, flap it over, and just one piece of tape and write a name on it.
And, like, Sharpie.
Yeah, yes. I might put the name on first if something delicate is inside, but otherwise, just once it's wrapped, to, you know, Jeff from Todd, bam, done.
Well, enough about holiday shopping and enough about that. I had the, you know, big pay-per-view or season finale for Chikara this past weekend. Crazy show, tons of people. Somebody got a free copy of Venom. Which we won't be talking about on the show, only because you and I don't, you don't read it, I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could have gave me the copy, because you had two this week.
I did have two. Remember when I was at the shop, and I said, and I said, this stack feels heavy?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the perfect storm of stupidity on both myself and Matt, who works at the shop, who does the pull list. I forgot to write Venom down on my list, which is a huge... huge no-no for me, but he somehow psychically knew I was going to forget to write it down, so he made sure to put two copies in my bag.
And then on top of that, whoever rang out should have noticed that, too.
Yes, so. Stronger Josh.
Stronger Josh totally yes. Missed the boat, but...
Oh, goodness. But it was a just real quick review of that. It was a good issue. It was a good jumping on point. It's what the point one issues are supposed to be. You know, the two purposes that they serve is to launch a new book and then be a good jumping on point. Sometimes it doesn't achieve either of those, but this one did. It's like, here's everything that's happened in the last 27 issues of Venom. Here's what happened to wrap up that tie, the crossover, the Minimum Carnage thing, and here's where things are going for the next, you know, year of the comic.
I like a good point one issue.
Right. So that's out of the way. That's your teaser for, you know, for the books that we're actually going to be talking about later that both Todd and I did read. But there is tons and tons of news to talk about. Books that I love becoming ongoing series. Directors, past transgressions coming back to haunt them. New books from both Marvel and DC that are going to be getting announced soon. Talk about TV shows and the movies and huge, huge shakeups at DC.
Yes, I've been hearing about that all week, and I'm so confused about it, I can't wait to get into that.
Well, I think we can talk, you know, there's shakeups on books for creators, and then even more behind-the-scenes stuff, but we'll get into all of that. We'll also get into some digital stuff, the digital freebies and sales that I always like to point out. There hasn't been a good sale in a while that, like, runs the course of the week. Usually the sales happen on a Monday or over the weekend, so we don't get to know about them or we don't really get to push them on the show. Mm-hmm. But there is a good one going on right now that I'd like to mention to people of a book that I recommend that I've mentioned before in the show, actually.
And your recommendations are nearly always good.
Yes, that's a separate tablet to write those in. Yes. Leonard's recommendations, the Wit and Wisdom, and then just the general weekly long box, notes and musings.
And the Todd nods. Don't forget about the
and
Todd
nods. And the Todd nods as well. Well, the Todd nod is very very limited, so that could be just on a post-it note even.
Well, I'm going to start pushing more, so that's we might even push a book or two on this show.
That's a great segue. My mind gets wiped sometimes when other things go on. I had mentioned to Todd earlier in the week that there's going to be a new book that we're going to get the show behind, like how we did with books like Daredevil, and well, mostly Daredevil. But there's another book that is deserving of us to be talking about much more often because it's an awesome book.
And you took and you said it's a layup for me to like it, so yes. You better be right.
Todd, I'd be willing to bet my firstborn son that this is going to be a layup.
Okay.
So that's going to be included in the books of what we read last week, what we're most looking forward to coming out this week, and I tipped my hand on that on last week's show, so there's going to be no surprises there. And then our Twitter question from last week, which was, who is your favorite replacement hero? And we got a bunch of really cool choices, people that I wasn't even thinking of. But a lot of them were the ones that, like, popped in my head. And this was a very difficult one to me. This one came down to the 11th hour for me to finally make up my mind.
I'm the same way. There was three that were floating around my head, and I had to cut it down to one.
I can guarantee at least two of those three you and I probably had the same.
Probably, because I'm thinking a good idea on who they are.
Yes. So let's dive right into the news. I do just want to touch on some of the TV and movie stuff. First, of course, we don't need to tell you, faithful listener of the Weekly Long Box, that Dark Knight Rises comes out on DVD today. So, hey, Christmas gift. Get it for someone who likes the Batman movies. This was a good one. I think we said on the show our opinion was that it was maybe better than Avengers, or was that just me?
Nope, that was me too, and I've been I'm still taking bullets for that.
So yeah, it's just so crazy to see how many people just didn't like it. And I know a lot of people say if the Dark Knight one, the Heath Ledger Joker movie wasn't so good, more people would probably like this one. But I still think that this movie stands on its own. There's very few perfect movies, especially comic book movies. This one does have its flaws, a few little clunky bits of dialogue and stuff. But all in all, it's a really, really awesome movie. So if you didn't check it out in the theaters, definitely check it out because it is out on DVD this week.
Might be first in line.
Yes. And DC has more and more movie and TV stuff coming out. They're casting for a Wonder Woman TV show, similarly in the vein of Smallville and Arrow, which I am going to get around to watching. I'm almost caught up on all my other TV shows. Not Walking Dead, though. I'm still two episodes behind on that, so there will be no Walking Dead talk here. I know that doesn't come back until February, so I have until then to watch those two episodes, and I might be able to squeeze them into my busy schedule.
If I don't spoil them for you first.
If you don't spoil them. So, yeah, there's a Wonder Woman TV show in the vein of Smallville and Arrow coming up. They're casting for it. I guess it's going to be like a teenage Wonder Woman, and, you know, they're just casting, so who knows? This will be, like, the second attempt at a Wonder Woman show. Who knows how far this one will go, but apparently Arrow is successful enough that they're going forward with another shot at Wonder Woman in just as few years. Like, less than a year ago, that other one was piloted around, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, and they had, like, you know, some footage from it, and it crashed and burned. I think a lot of it was from people, you know, seeing little tidbits and you know, complaining online. So, like, I've already heard people talking about this because the synopsis was out, and it was like a girl named Iris, and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. It's not Diane and this and that. And I'm like, we're not even, you know, we don't even have a person. Maybe it's a different name, because I think Geoff Johns said it's probably just like a code name for, like, mm-hmm. while you're doing the drafts, so, you know, you don't give too much away about the show. So, you know, like, I'll wait until we get there and see.
Right. And that I was going to bring that up, that Geoff Johns pointed that out, and wisely so, in regards to this, because people, you know, especially in this day and age where we don't have, like, as a lot of people like to say, the 24-hour news cycle, where it's more like a 22-minute news cycle. As soon as something comes out, it's already, like, been critiqued and decided whether or not it's going to pass or fail, mm-hmm. you know, even before an hour is up, let alone a half hour. So I'm glad Geoff Johns, who's a big muckety-muck at DC these days, you know, chimed in and kind of tried to quell some of those fires.
Yep. It's one of the Trinity at DC right now.
Yes. But. So speaking of the Trinity and speaking of the big DC stuff, rumors and speculation are coming out of who the villain is going to be in the Justice League movie, and I don't think it should surprise anyone of who it's going to be.
Star?
Far be it... you know what? I would love a Despero movie.
Mm-hmm.
As the villain, you know, Starro would be awesome. He was the first villain that they fought in the Justice League, you know, Silver Age stories and stuff. But, no, the speculation is that it's going to be Darkseid, which I think kind of makes sense, but might also be a knee-jerk reaction to Thanos being the big baddie in all the future Marvel movies. They're like, hey, we have a guy like that around here somewhere. Let's put him in our movie, and maybe moms and dads will think that this is just another Avengers movie.
Yeah, my thinking on this, though, is because he was the villain in Justice League 1-6, the new Geoff Johns, mm-hmm. Jim Lee run, I think they were setting up the Bible or the pattern for the Justice League movie. And I think that's how the first six issues went, is how the movie's going to go. You know, something happens, you know, somebody shows up, and then we see, you know, characters meeting each other who have a backstory. And I just think that that's the way they're going to go. And Darkseid, to me, just seemed perfectly obvious. And he's a villain big enough to, why would you need the whole Justice League to fight somebody?
Right.
So that works perfect.
Starro.
I'm with you. I was thinking like Despero, maybe. There was a couple others. I'd like to see an Amazo. I think that would be kind of cool. Somebody who could take all, like, you know, one man, he's got all the powers of them. So that would be a good, you know, battle scene somewhere. But I'm fine with Darkseid.
And see, that's the thing. I think Justice League has a lot more credible villains that could carry that side of a movie than the Avengers do.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But I think Avengers have some big-time villains, too. So you may not know them off the top of your head, but, you know, what does the public know, too, you know? Like, compared to, to obscure villain comics. If I said Starro to the man on the street, you know, maybe at least Darkseid, he was in, you know, Superpowers, the cartoon, all the way back in the 80s. He was in the, you know, Justice League and Superman cartoons. So at least he's had a presence.
Yeah. And Starro was most recently on TV as the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon. Like, that was like an ongoing thread throughout most of the last season.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know that.
Yes.
See, that's why we both cover each other on the show here. But yeah, I think Starro just as a cool villain, but I think also like just a giant starfish, you might have to tweak it a little bit, you know?
No, man. I mean, like the CG, like that. I think they can do a real cool CGI, like big giant crazy monster like that, and then them mind controlling people, and then other people in the, you know, Justice League getting the Starro faced on there, and like cool reveals of stuff like that. It should be Starro as the villain in the first movie.
The only problem with that is actors don't want to wear masks to cover their face, so a mask and a Starro on top—that's just crazy. Mm-hmm. That's just, no agent's going to allow that.
Listen, all of these actors need to be more like Carl Urban in that Judge Dredd movie that came out this past year.
Did you get to see that yet?
No, I did not. I don't think it's out on DVD yet, but I'm sure it'll be out soon if it's not already on its way out.
Because that's a I know you, perfect Christmas
movie. You told me it was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. If you like Judge Dredd, big action movies kind of a thing. Perfect Christmas movie. I think it should be out soon.
But he doesn't take his helmet off during the entirety of that movie.
Right, no. There's one brief scene where he's putting on his costume, not costume, but his uniform in the beginning, wherever he lives, and you never see it. It's just like his back is turned and his head is down, so you see him like put the jacket on and stuff like that, and then the helmet goes on and he turns around, and from that point on, helmet's on till the end of the movie.
There you go. That's going to be, I think that's going to be the prevailing wisdom. If you know what, it would have been if that was a little bit better of a, did better at the box office,
yeah,
you
that,
know what I mean?
That tanked for what it cost.
Yeah.
But it was so good. I would love a sequel.
Well, you know, we've speculated here enough about the DC movies and so forth. There was some, I guess a bit of a kerfuffle with the Marvel movies coming out here, specifically the director, someone that I'm a big fan of, James Gunn, the writer and director of the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy movie. We didn't discuss here that they'd already begun casting for it, and I guess some information came out earlier or later last week where it was a blog that he had wrote about the superheroes that he would most want to be with.
Yes.
I guess is the best way I could put it.
Yes. Hang out, have a sandwich.
Yes. And again, it did get a little racy and ribald in regards to some of the ladies of both the Marvel and DC universe. And, you know, it caused a big stink. You know, we live in this world where anything that you did ever, it couldn't come back to bite you in the end. And this did, and he did issue a apology for it. And, you know, I think it was much to do about nothing between me and you.
I'm the same way.
And everybody listening.
Yeah, didn't bother me. I think it was a little overblown. And I personally think it's gone already. I mean, this week, you know, I haven't seen anything about it. There's no news that he's not the director of Guardians of the Galaxy anymore. I mean, with stuff like this, it can go really bad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh yeah.
But right now, it just looks like I honestly believe it's blown over. Unless there's, you know, something else comes out. I don't mean the same thing again, just something new. I think this is over.
And I don't want to be the one to break all this news to you, but I've been a fan of James Gunn for a very long time, all the way back to his writing and directing stints on such films as Romeo and Juliet, his interesting turn as a Stephen Hawking-like character in another Troma movie, a lot of the other stuff that he's been involved in. Sure, he did the Scooby-Doo movie. And I'm sure that's what some people might know him from. But he did some crazy out there stuff, you know, 15, 20 years ago on the fringes of Hollywood. And that stuff still exists.
Did he do Slither?
Yes, he did.
Because that's the one thing that I kind of know of that he did, other than Scooby-Doo. That was a masterpiece. But I can't think of like anything that I've seen that he did. And I've only seen bits and pieces of Slither, so...
Slither's really awesome. Big horror movie fan that I am, big James Gunn fan that I am, and it was inspired by the 80s horror movie, which in and of itself was a takeoff of 50s sci-fi horror movies, Night of the Creeps. That's a good double feature for you kids at home. Night of the Creeps and Slither.
I've seen Night of the Creeps. My favorite scene is when the PI or whatever he is comes to the house and tells the girls about their dates. That's still a classic to me.
Yeah, it's right in the trailer. But yeah, that's a really good. That's one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And Slither is really good as well. I don't know if the CGI stuff will still hold up. But anyway, I'm glad the issue with James Gunn blew over. It was a stupid blog thing that he wrote. And, you know, he apologized. He was a man. He didn't ignore it. And hopefully he's able to stay on because I think he can do a fun Guardians of the Galaxy movie, at the very least a different type of superhero movie, the sort of mind that he has.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Yes. So I also wanted to just mention real quick in passing that the announcement was made, I guess somewhat officially, that Fatale, the current Ed Brubaker book from Image is going to go on longer than he had originally planned. If you read his little prose pieces in the issues, he always talked about how he had an idea in mind of how long the book was going to go. I think issue 10 just came out this past week. I think it was originally set to go for 24 issues, but he had said at this point it's definitely going to go longer, saying, I guess you can call it an ongoing. Only ongoing in the fact that it's definitely going beyond the 24 issues he'd originally projected. So I'm glad more Ed Brubaker projects, the better. Unfortunately, it'll keep him away from superhero stuff, but I've been really liking Fatale. It's a really good book.
I'm with you. I've only read the first storyline. I was waiting for to find out how many issues the second storyline is, because I buy them to support them, but then read them, you know, as the trade comes out and they say, oh, it's, you know, 7 through 12 or whatever. That's what I'll read. So I'm waiting for that to switch over. But like you said, an ongoing, as in the story has an end. It's just a matter of how long it takes him to get there. And fine if he's off superhero books. I'm with that. As long as he's writing something, anything, that I can get a little Ed Brubaker fix in my, you know, comic diet.
Yeah, the issue that came out this past week, 10, was the end of that current storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it's little five-issue blocks for the stories, because I know when issue 11 comes out at the end of this month, the trade of the last five issues is coming out the same day, which is a really smart strategy that Image does a really good job of getting that most recent trade out when the new issue of the next storyline is coming.
Yep, I'm all for that, man. That's a good thing.
Yes. So let's dip into some of the stuff that's been going on with DC. I know you said you read some of it and your head was spinning.
Yep, because I'm not sure what's real anymore.
Well, it all started over the weekend when there was speculation of different people leaving different books, specifically because of the big editorial thing that came through about the next big event that they're doing, I guess, over the summer. Possibly starting as early as April, where it's going to be a whole bunch of old villains coming back. I think a lot of people were associating this to DC's version of Acts of Vengeance, the old Marvel storyline, which actually is still a pretty fun storyline. And all of it is collected in two giant hardcovers that Marvel puts out. I defy you to get through them all. That's a lot of books.
That is. I remember Acts of Vengeance. I only read, yes, a little bit of it, but I know there. You know, that was the heyday of the big, every book gets a segment of something, part of the crossover. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. And that's the thing. These two hardcovers collect all of them.
Wow. That's, yes, got to be like over 8 issues.
You know, and people scoff at, like, oh, Siege, when you read all the crossover, it's like 49 issues. Or, you know, Avengers versus X-Men, it's like 80-some issues. It's like, really? Acts of Vengeance was crossing over into every book for the entire summer, and a lot of those books were double shipping.
And I'm going to throw out, like, a different storyline. I think it was, like, one of the Infinity War or Crusade ones, where everything got a tie-in. And back then, tie-ins consisted of I bought a Silver Sable one because she was going to Castle Doom, and I was like, oh, I'm going to pick this up. Doom's in this. And she knocks on the door. Boris or a Doombot answers. I forget who it was. She's like, I need to speak to Doom. She's like, Doom's off in space fighting the Infinity War. Click. Go. And the rest of the book was just nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, that's in how, like, sometimes a tie-in was back in the day. Like, you really wasted your money on it.
Yes, I remember back, I think it was definitely during Infinity War, it crossed over into Spider-Man, and it was a little bit more, where I guess whoever had the, like, what's his, Magus, maybe?
Magus, that's the way I call him.
Magus, yes, know. he had imbued like the Spider-Man doppelganger with cosmic abilities and all this other nonsense. And I think it happened, like, one issue. They brought it back in the Maximum Carnage storyline, and that was about it.
Mm.
But at least, like, he showed up in the book and did something.
Right. Yep.
But anyway, yeah. So based on this, a lot of people were, you know, rumors were abound that creators were going to get moved off books and shuffled around because they were not happy about having these different storylines foisted upon them in the middle of whatever storylines they had planned. There was, you know, and the person who was the center of a lot of this controversy was Gail Simone, who we've talked about much on the show about one of her books that she wrote, Secret Six, which is both Todd and I's one of our favorite books of the last couple years, The Leaving Megalopolis, Kickstarter that came up, and there was talk that she had admitted that she was going to take over Deathstroke, but apparently this kept her off the book, and then there was rumors that she was leaving Batgirl, and I'm hearing all sorts of things about Scott Snyder possibly leaving Swamp Thing and an undetermined time. One of our listeners, Jay Bandoy, tweeted to me yesterday that Jeff Lemire stated at a signing that he's good on Animal Man for at least another year and then possibly off the book to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very interesting 2013 of which creators end up staying on which books going forward. And that's going to, you know, maybe help my pocketbook out a little bit.
Yeah, you know, depending on who's writing what. I've got a big, like coming up shuffling books all around myself. So, you know, in the next year, if, like, Jeff Lemire did leave Swamp Thing, you know, I'd have to see who came on and other books like that. But I could see me, you know, dropping this, dropping that, and following, you know, all the writers around, depending.
Yep, because that's, you know, we've talked about it here on the show, but I think it's been a while since we've actually brought it up. Todd and I both have, like, a few characters in our back pocket that we'll definitely read. Like, Todd has Doom. I have, you know, anytime there's a Captain Cold appearance or a Kang appearance, I always like to check those out, and other characters that I'll always read regardless of who the writer is. But we're more so writer guys. You know, if there's a writer that we like, we'll pretty much read anything that he writes, regardless if it's a character we like or not.
Yep. And there's only a few artists, more writers with us, I believe. I don't know about you, but me, a few artists.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes there's a nice perfect storm of, like, that Threshold book that's coming up with Keith Giffen writing space characters and Scott Collins doing the backup features.
Yeah, I was like, I think Leonard might like this book.
That's a book right up my alley. So, yes, keep it tuned here. I'm sure we'll be discussing about those creative shakeups as they happen. I'm sure as the solicitations for February start rolling out in the next week or two. At least at DC's, we'll see some of that. I'm sure Scott Snyder will be staying on Batman and his projected upcoming Man of Steel book to go along with the movie coming out next summer. I don't think he's leaving those two books.
No, and we've already discussed, I think, that he said American Vampire was going on hiatus either way.
Yes.
So he doesn't have that, not to worry about, but to write, so he can focus on, you know, a couple less books.
And that brings us to the last news story that happened on Monday, and that is Karen Berger stepped down from DC, and specifically Vertigo. And Karen Berger is a name that you probably know, but don't really know why you know it. A lot of hardcore comic people, and we cater to a lot of those folks. She was the driving force behind Vertigo. She essentially created Vertigo and made it what it was. And, you know, books like Sandman, books like Preacher, so many books. I could be here all night naming everything that she was involved in, getting to DC, creators, artists, stories that she got pushed through. And it's all because of her.
Yep.
And a lot of people are saying that with her stepping down from Vertigo, that could very well mean the end of Vertigo, at the very least as we know it. And I think there was even talk of that on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we'd see Vertigo go away, because I don't know, like, just on the trades alone of the characters that they have, I don't know if they just put the regular DC print on it, because I think, like, they had a lot of different deals than they do with DC and stuff like that. So I could see the Vertigo imprint staying, but being in title only as just like, oh, for the Vertigo stuff reprinted. And maybe some occasional new stuff, because I don't see, like I said before, a lot of big writers and artists going there when they could go to Image and own more of it instead of, you know, Warner Brothers having their finger in the pie.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see if she ends up showing up somewhere else, going to maybe another studio, an IDW or an Image, as you mentioned, or maybe even starting her own imprint. She is probably one of the most well-liked editors and behind-the-scenes corporate types in all of comics that pretty much every creator likes. When this all happened, you know, of course, if you're on Twitter and you follow comic book people, you probably saw a lot of discussion of this earlier in the week. And I don't think there was a bad word said about her from anyone. And if there was, I didn't see it.
Me either. She gave a lot of people their breaks, a lot of big people. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you can give, you know, Joe Bag of Donuts his break. But when you're given, like, Neil Gaiman and, you know, Grant Morrison, and you just go down the list... That's where your bones are made, and that's why I think, you know, she's well respected. And you're talking about her going somewhere else. I could see her retiring, man. Like, you know, she, I'm pretty sure she probably did some bank on some of that stuff that she helped create. So, or well, not create as a writer, but, you know, get pushed through and stuff like that. So who knows? I'm with you. I'd like to. I want to see where she falls.
Right. Now, see, I can just, I'm just pitching this to you as a scenario. Tell me what you think of this. They do a situation where some studio, some upstart studio, whether it be an IDW or somebody else, gives her a bucket of money, just puts her as like the figurehead editor-in-chief, kind of like how Stan Lee was at Marvel for all those years, and just on her name and good graces alone, are able to get some creators that they wouldn't normally get to come over just because of their loyalty to her, or lure some other kind of on the cusp big name creators that aren't there yet that want that opportunity to work with her. Like, there was a great story that spun out of all this that China Melville, and I'm really butchering his last name. That's what we do here on the show. The Dial H book that got relaunched with the third wave of the DC books. She was the editor on that book. And that book apparently was originally supposed to be a Vertigo book. And when DC overall decided to make it part of the New 52, China Melville said, the decision was, you know, the reason I'm coming to you to do this book is because I'm working with her. And if she's not going to be the editor of the book, I'm not doing the book.
Mm-hmm. And she, from what I remember, she was pushing for him to do Swamp Thing at Vertigo before, you know, it got yanked out from under and taken back to the DC universe. And I think... that's like she fought for, to keep those characters, you know, at Vertigo. And I think once she was, you know, usurped with all the, you know, characters going back, now, she, you know, characters people want to write, she doesn't have. So a lot, you have to have people coming in with new ideas. And once again, new ideas, it's like, oh, well, we're going to get a piece of that. I think you'll still get Vertigo, like young guys at Vertigo going, well, it's my shot, you know, so we're going to bring them in. Yeah, I won't own anything, but... I wasn't going to get this shot anyway. So, like, we'll see some interest, maybe see some interesting up-and-comers that way.
That's going to, you know, this along with those, you know, creative shakeups, writers and artists leaving some books, it's going to be a very interesting 2013 here for DC.
Yep. I'm in it for the long haul. How about you?
Listen, I've been here, you know, not as long as you, but I've been here for a long time. I never wavered my fandom of comics, and I don't think this is going to shake me either.
I've had doubts, but I've never been broken.
So before we get into the books from last week that we talked about, and there's a lot of those, I do just want to really briefly mention the digital stuff that's out there, some freebies that are available through Comixology, and I'll make sure to have the links to those in the show notes. The first issue of the Fear Itself crossover, the first issue of the New Mutant book from the 80s, and Ultimate Comics X-Men number 1, which I think was like the second or third relaunch of the Ultimates X-Men book. So those are all freebies through Comixology as we're speaking. They're only good for a week, so definitely check those out. And until Friday night, IDW has the Dungeons & Dragons book. A lot of those were written by John Rogers, who wrote the Blue Beetle book at DC, among other things. He is currently the showrunner on the TV show Leverage. We've mentioned it on the show before, the hardcover collections are set up to look like your old DM manuals or your, the monster compendiums from Dungeons & Dragons.
The monster manual, yep.
Monster manual, that's what it is. But all the books are there available digitally. I think the collections are all there as like $4 a pop, $5 a pop, and then individually the issues are 99 cents. Definitely check them out if you like Sword and Sorcery, Conan, that sort of stuff. These are really fun, and if you're an old D&D person, check them out. I think you'll enjoy them.
I think I might have asked you this on here, but I forget. Did you ever play D&D?
I did, very briefly, though. Okay. By the time I had gotten into it and we were able to get people around, we were all very poor at being dungeon masters. Mm-hmm. And the only game that we can find locally in our area, and this was, you know, you were in Scranton, we were in one of the little suburby towns. the folks that were DMing games were more interested in the extracurricular activities than the actual game itself.
Gotcha, like making props and dice and stuff like that. Yeah.
No. They were more interested in like using the game as an excuse to alter their state of mind.
Gotcha. I was kidding. That wasn't my thing. I played a lot in school and high school, and then it kind of ended. But when I went on to Magic the Gathering, and then that's where it ended.
And that's what we ended up doing, is because the gaming situation with the local DMs was so poor in our area. That's how we all found Magic the Gathering, and that's what we played. And that's the only like video game that I really get a chance to play today. They have like an online version through the Xbox Live, and I play that. It's fun. It brings back old memories. But then there's rules that don't make any sense to me, and that's. You know, I like it because I pay the, you know, whatever it is, like $10 for the game and I'm good to go, like playing all the decks and unlocking all the decks. It brings back a lot of memories from high school, being an old man.
We had a few throwdowns with Magic back in the day, too, me and you. But I wish I kept my cards. I sold them. I got a good chunk of money for them, but maybe I'll have to pick up the Xbox thing one of these days and take a run at you.
I sold almost all of my cards. The only things that I kept were, we're completely off the subject of comics. I promise we'll be back on them, but, you know, you might be interested. From Beta, remember Beta?
Yeah.
I have four black-bordered Beta Hypnotic Spectres. And then I have a black-bordered German language Demonic Tutor.
Are these the things that you're using for your son's education?
No. Those were just like my favorite cards to play.
I just know if those were the big expensive ones, no, like the Black Lotus like, and oh my.
Those are your Moxes and your Black Lotus and your Time Warps and your stuff like that. But no, these were the cards that I love to play. Like I love the artwork on them, you know, and. I was always big on, like, the hand destruction, and I kept those cards to, like, keep that in my mind. I had another deck destruction deck. If you remember the Millstones and all that sort of jazz.
Yeah, now we're getting
those
real
ended
deep.
Up towards, what was
now
that?
Now we're getting real deep.
We're getting real deep in the Magic the Gathering. Those to this day, like, on the Xbox version, and, like, I think it's available for, like, PC and PS3 and everything else like that. Whenever there's that deck destruction deck... Mm-hmm. That's the one that I'm like, oh, I got to unlock all the cards in that one first.
Ah, okay. I remember that.
Yes. But anyway.
Yeah, we're off. Can you imagine we're off topic? Wow.
Yes. Doesn't happen very often. So, Todd, I'm going to give it to you. Where would you like to begin with the books that we read last week?
I'm going to start with FF. Let's start with FF.
Oh, you actually read FF.
Yes, I did. It's an FF book. Of course I read it.
Well, I know you had said that you were on the fence about it. I know that you had read the main Fantastic Four book by Fraction and Bagley, but this one by Fraction and Mike Allred, you said you weren't too sure on.
I picked it up. I got to try it before, you know, to know what I want to do, because it's an FF book.
Mm-hmm. So I'll let you start off of what your thoughts on this book were.
I thought it was an okay story. And when I mean like okay, I mean like dead center. Not, you know, an amazing, not a terrible story. It was passable. The art really took me out of it. There was times.
Really?
I like Mike Allred for stuff. Allred? I keep saying Allred. But on this, it was just, I don't know. The only character I think that he made look good was the Thing. I couldn't take Ant-Man seriously at all. There was a scene where him and Reed were talking about the death of his daughter. And I was like, this is a joke. I'm like, I can't look at this art and be moved by the story that he's telling in any way, shape, or form. And I can't, like, once again, I can't take credit for this. Somebody said, when I'm looking at Mike Allred doing a real comic, superhero comic book, I feel like he's doing, like, a parody of comics. Like, you know that?
That was actually Dave from our local shop.
Yep. Yeah.
Who had said that, yes.
And, like, you know when you see somebody on a TV show who's, like, we have a comic, and we're not taking this seriously because we just need it for the story for 10 seconds, and they just draw it, and it looks not very good? To me, that's what this looked like. And it completely took me out of the story, and because the story was so average to me, that bad art knocked it down a notch, and I'm probably not going to be picking up anymore.
Oh, that breaks my heart. See, because I really liked it. You know, I thought it was very interesting, the characters. I did have I like Mike Allred's art. Oh. You know, full disclosure, I really like his art. I like the fill-in issue that he did on Daredevil. I didn't feel that felt like a parody of a comic book. I felt that that fit the story since it was a flashback story. And he does have a, you know, a little bit kind of an older style, but with like a nouveau edge. I did have some issues with the way he drew She-Hulk. But other than that, I really like the issue. I like the way he told the story with, like, the different members of the FF. I guess as a longtime reader of both Fantastic Four and FF Future Foundation, I'm sure you're happy that at least those characters are sticking around, that they're not just being shunted off to the side.
Yeah, I did like that, that they what's come before hasn't just been thrown away in a one-panel mm-hmm. exposition, you know? So, yeah, I'm with that. And I think if we do check the tape, I liked Mike Allred on Daredevil also. This book, I don't know why it doesn't work. I think it might be the coloring. I think when they were doing the Daredevil one, don't hold me to this, that it was a little darker, you know, colored and stuff like this. But with this mm-hmm. one, I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, just the flat coloring on top of him and stuff. I don't know. It just didn't work for me. But I don't hate Mike's art on everything, just mainstream superhero stuff.
Well, and I'll ask you this, and I'll try to tiptoe around this one as spoiler-free as possible, since I didn't read the main Fantastic Four book. The reason that Reed tells Ant-Man that they're going off into space,
mm-hmm.
is that the reason he tells him, like, is that the reason he tells the rest of the family, or is this the reveal of that?
No, it's not the reveal of that. He hasn't told the family.
Okay, so he does mention that in the main Fantastic Four book,
right,
then.
Right, he knows. Well, the reason he's going off is mentioned in the same thing in the Fantastic Four book, but he tells the family, you know, and it's in this one, and it was already in Fantastic Four, that he's like, we're going off to be adventurers, to different places, and he thinks that the key to what's going on is in these places, and that's the cover. You know, so
okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly lines up with Fantastic Four, and the girl the Human Torches, she's in Fantastic Four, and they set it up over there. So the two books, story wise, pretty close, but I'm not mm-hmm. digging what they're doing in FF. So
yeah, and I'm on board for it. I'm glad to see you know, like Scott Lang. I'm a sucker for a crazy team in Mike Allred's art. And this was this issue, we didn't really get to see them do much. This was just like the formation of the team. And I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic of how they work with the Future Foundation people. And I like those characters. I love the one character, and I forget his name. I guess he's he's a clone of the Wizard.
Yes. Oh, Bentley.
Bentley, yes.
Bentley's hysterical because Bentley's borderline crazy, but you know, he wants to be a supervillain, but you know, they keep him in check. So it's kind of, it's funny. It is. I will give him, he was the best part of that, 'cause I liked Bentley in FF.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked his character in there, and I'm very excited to see him, you know, interact with everybody else. So I'm still on board for this book. You can go your way. I'm on board for it.
So basically, you know, to get up to speed, I'm going to be getting the Fantastic Four and you're going to be only getting the FF.
That's correct.
Oh, well, that's not bad then. We could cover both sides and see how it works.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And I think the schedule does put them out that the Fantastic Four book will come out first, FF will come out second, and we'll just compare notes after the issues are both out.
Awesome.
Yes. So I'm going to move on. There's two books we're saving toward the end. Three books. Oh, you know what? Thor, God of Thunder, number 2.
Okay.
By Jason Aaron and Issad Ribic.
Yes. That's the way I've heard his name pronounced.
Yes. This, as we had mentioned, we did get a little bit of, you know, the current age and future Thor, but this was mostly about young Thor. And his first, I guess, battle with the God Killer, the serial killer of the gods.
Yes.
I'm on board for this book. 2 issues in, I'm sold. And then even if I wasn't sold, if I was on the fence about this book, the prose piece in the back by Jason Aaron
mm-hmm.
completely sold me on the book even more.
So I don't remember if I read the prose piece in the back.
Oh, go back and read it. Go back and read it.
Do you want me to do it right now?
No, don't do it right now. It's a whole page with three columns, and everything's real small print. It'll take you forever.
Gotcha. I was only kidding. But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm sold on this book. I love young Conan. I mean, Thor. But with powers. It was fun seeing him fight the Slayer of Gods or Butcher of Gods or whatever he is. There was some cool, like, you know, bloody scenes with, you know, them flying on the horses. I thought that was really cool. I like – there's a scene early on with him and the hammer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's brilliant because we're so accustomed to seeing Thor, you know, with his hammer that at this point, you know, even in issue one, we see that he has a sword and it even has a name. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. So it's just like to see a different version of not a version, but like Thor without his hammer. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. I maybe learn a little more about, like, you know, how he became worthy or whatever. Now we're going to – next issue, we're going to get modern Thor, like today's
yes.
Thor, and then future Thor. I'm with you. I love this book. It's not – like, you know, I know Jason Aaron can be a little wacky with some of his books, and I like that, like on the Hulk and the X-Men – Wolverine and the X-Men. With this is the way I think a Thor book should feel. He doesn't throw any craziness in. He just throws a lot of awesome around, and I'm okay with that.
And there's a part right in the middle of the book, like right if you have the book, it's right after like where the staples would be, and it's where the battle begins with Thor and the Killer of Gods, and then Thor has the inner monologue about the time that he, you know, stared into the pit and looked in the same eyes of the God Killer, and he's going on about that, and that was like some of the most moving stuff. Like that really set the tone, I think,
mm-hmm.
for like what this arc is going to be all about.
Yep, I'm with you. I thought that was some brilliant writing too.
Yes, and I listened to an interview recently with Jason Aaron where he said when he got this book and he pitched this book, like he's pitching all this dark stuff and all these terrible things that he's going to do. And then, like, in the back of his mind, it's like, all right, now, once they agree to this, then that's when I'll spring all the goofy stuff I'm going to do when I cross Thor over with Wolverine and the X-Men.
I'd probably read both of those.
But no, it doesn't look like it's going to be happening anytime soon. But, like, just as he's pitching all this crazy stuff that's happening in Thor, God of Thunder, he's also thinking, it's like, oh, we got to get some crazy stuff in the Wolverine book with Thor.
Thor and Wolverine, hammer versus claws.
Yes. So we got three books left to talk about. I'll let you pick.
How about Uncanny Avengers?
Yes, Uncanny Avengers number 2 by Rick Remender and John Cassaday. We both read this last time, and we were both kind of on the fence about it. I think you were kind of leaning toward more yay, and I think I was kind of leaning more toward nay.
Mm-hmm. I would have to say that's where we were.
Okay.
Now I read this issue. I'm first of all shocked that Cassaday did 2 issues. So, like, he must have had a 10-year head start. But I read this book, and once again, it's okay. And okay just isn't good enough. I like some of the ideas that they have. Once again, I like the Red Skull. I like what they've done with him. You know, what his plan is. It makes total sense to me. I just don't know when it comes to the execution at times, it falls flat for me. So I'm starting to have this new rule, and I believe it was, you know, your rules. You said when it comes to movies, you know, you either want amazing or bad, like, and with comics, amazing or bad isn't the way to go. I just want something really, really good, and this isn't it. That made no sense what I just said, but Uncanny Avengers just isn't cutting the mustard for me, so I'm probably going to drop it to pick up All New X-Men. I read that, and I enjoyed that way more, and I thought it looked way better. So this is one of those, I'm dropping a book to pick up a book. Okay for what I think is really, really good.
Right, and I'll say this. I was not going to get this book. You know, I was completely off of it. I'm like, nope, I don't want anything to do with it. I didn't really dig the first issue. But then one of our listeners and a fellow competitor – well, I'm not a competitor, but he's a competitor in the world of wrestling. And again, he's caught up, and we've convinced him to read so many different books. His name's Alex Castle. This is a travesty on the Twitter machine. He had told me he had read it, and he really enjoyed it. So I picked it up. I was going into it with an open mind. And I'm with you. I love the Red Skull stuff. I love the way John Cassaday draws the Red Skull. He looks ominous and scary and, like, cool all at the same time. I feel Havoc is not in this book. He is only in this book by they tell us that he's in this book. We've never seen him do anything.
Right.
He did get a hug in this issue, but other than that, he hasn't done a single thing to deserve him leading the team. Wolverine even calls Captain America out on it. And I'm sure it's going to lead to something big, but right now I feel Havoc's being wasted in this book.
Like I said, Havoc has done nothing. And it's the thing about the book. I understand the reasoning. You know, like, Cap makes perfect sense as to why Havoc is there, but I'm with you. It just doesn't work. Like, it just seems to work on paper, but, like, when you do it, you're like, it doesn't fall together for me, so.
And there was some dialogue specifically, like, I really liked the way that Remender wrote Rogue using her powers.
Mm-hmm.
But then her dialogue and her, like, inner monologue, especially about, like, her past with Gambit, just felt, like, weird and creepy.
I was going to say dirty in a bad way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that turned me off to the book more than anything else, and I don't think that was his implied reasoning for putting it in there. Mm-hmm. So, this is not a book that I had on my pull list. It was a book that I just picked up the first time. I picked it up the second time. I will not be picking it up a third time.
Right. Like I said.
I tried.
Like I said, I tried all new X-Men. Real easy to get on board. That's one thing I have to give Bendis about it is the explanation. Like, if you've never read Avengers versus X-Men, they give you enough. And, you know, it's Beast going back to bring the old X-Men to show the new X-Men the way. And I'm like, fine. This concept is a little too convoluted to work where I like the other one. So one goes, one stays.
Now, I do want to, the next book that we're going to talk about before we get to the last book, of course, is a lot of times Todd, you know, he takes a bullet for the show.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times Todd is forced to do things against his will, you know, staying up to record the show or, you know, be personable, not unlike me, who's the world's most personable person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes Todd reads a book that was not on his pull list, and it's a book that I'm sure Todd, in a million years, would never think that he would read.
Right.
And there's a book that I never thought I would read in a million years myself. I almost said the lie was that I got it from my goddaughter, but it actually was being packed up before the show began. Todd can somewhat attest to it as my wife was in here ransacking the office for the Christmas gift.
Sure, I heard wife say that you were going to do that to cover, you know,
right,
that you bought it for yourself. I was there for that.
Oh, goodness. So the book that we're talking about is IDW's release from last week of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, number one. So, Todd, I'll let you begin.
You know what? I think I'm going to blow your mind here.
Okay.
It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
I read it. It was goofy and stupid in not a bad way. I don't mean that. And it was just right out of the first couple pages, there was three jokes that made me laugh out loud. One was a visual joke with the lion killed me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a koala bear joke, which was one of the worst puns in the history of the world. And if you, Leonard can attest, I love a good bad pun.
Yes.
But as I was reading, I was like, this is a fun little story. I equate it to like, Tiny Titans or those, you know, I'm trying to think of other children's books where, you know, it's not deep, it's funny, where an adult could read it with their kid and have fun. The art was perfect for what it was. They were ponies in the little pony land. As somebody who's never read My Little Pony or even, like, you know, watched the cartoons or anything, I was a little confused on who's, like, you know, when they were talking, like, the names of the pony, I couldn't tell you who they were at first. You know, Rainbow, you know, obviously, I started to get the
Rainbow Sparkle.
Right. Started to get the hair. So there was a rainbow. And I have to give them credit. They each had their own little, you know, personality. So that set them apart. You know, I can't see me picking up this book every month. But for a kid, and I even think a parent, like I said, with their kid, this is a great book.
I will agree with you. I'll even go as far as to say that I think this is probably a little bit more heady of a book than a Tiny Titans or a Superman Family Adventures.
Definitely.
There's a lot more going on. The story has a little bit more meat to it. It is a little pricey for a kid's book, but I think all of IDW's books are $3.99 anyway. But I didn't feel cheated by this book. I felt like I got like an entire story and like a, you know, I understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is not becoming a brony show. But if you have a young child, or if you are a reader of comics and a listener of the show, and you watch things on, you know, Cartoon Network, like the regular show or Adventure Time or stuff like that. What's the other one? Gravity Falls. If you watch any of those, I definitely think this book will be right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, this gets a big recommendation, but this is not the book that we're pushing.
No. But did I shock the heck out of you?
No, you know what? I knew you would like it.
Oh, wow. See, you know the inner me, Leonard.
I do. I know deep down inside you're a softie. And I know deep down inside, like, there was nothing in this book that was, like, that would make people be like, oh, I hate this. This is horrible. How dare they put this offensive thing out? Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go in with a certain mindset, too. You can't go in thinking you're going to get Watchmen, you know?
Right. Listen, there's references in this, both as sight gags and, you know, in the actual dialogue of the story, to Invasion of the Body Snatchers, mm-hmm. the Blues Brothers, Roadhouse, among so many other things.
The Roadhouse one caught me for, you know, off guard. I have to admit that.
I was tipped off to it a little bit early, but it was still awesome and funny when I read it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I'm gonna give the thumbs up to My Little Pony. Friendship is Magic.
Yes. So the final book that we're gonna be talking about is the book that I'd mentioned to Todd last week, that we need to put the promotional machine of the show behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book that's doing great in sales for a book of its kind, and it's a book that deserves more and more readers. And I thought this was a pretty good jumping on point for the book.
Which book are we talking about? Because I'm so confused.
That would be All-Star Western number 14.
Layup. It was a layup, Leonard. I'm with you.
I read this issue, and I'm like, man, this is an awesome comic book. Everybody should be reading this.
The best way I could describe this book is it has something for everybody. If you like Westerns, this book's for you. Do you like Kung Fu books? This book's for you.
Yes.
Do you like horror books? This book's for you. The stuff going on with the high...
Do you think the Justice League movie villain should be Eclipso? Then this book is for you.
Oh, nice. Nice. just the Hyde character is amazing. I mean, I think we know I'm a fan of Jonah Hex in All-Star Western.
Yes.
But, like, just the side characters in this and everything, just between Amadeus Arkham and Tallulah, and now we have the Barbary Ghost, and, you know, we've had other characters running around. I've had so much fun with this book. Like, as you know, I've pushed this book since issue one. So, usually I can never find anything wrong with an All-Star Western issue. So I'm with you. I'll push this to the stratosphere if I get the chance.
Yes. It is a pricier book. It's one of the few $3.99 DC books, but it does have a second feature in it. It's a, you know, it's a kind of like rotating couple, like two, like a one or a two or a three, you know, issue story of different Western DC characters. Right now it's Tomahawk, right?
Yes.
So I would say to you, our loyal listeners, I think you can probably get away. I would pick up issues 13 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
You could skip the zero issue.
Yep.
But I think if you just pick up issues 13 and 14, that's a perfect place to start on this.
Yep, I totally agree. And I'm a big fan of Moritat's art. I think he does a perfect job on this. You know, full disclosure, he did a few nice sketches for me, so I might be a little biased. but yeah,
he's got you in his back pocket, is what he
does.
Yes,
he does. So, you know, like I said, just All-Star Western, Jonah Hex, you can't go wrong.
Yes, and this is a book I never would have thought I would like. This book, Todd, has been the Jonah Hex man for as long as I've known him. You know, as long as you've listened to his voice on this podcast, and I talked on the show here, it was last year when Todd and I went to Baltimore Comic Con. We went to the DC New 52 panel, and Jimmy Pamiotti talked about this book, and he came off as a very likable and a very good person. And just based on him being a good person, not so much of Todd pushing this book down my throat for years and years, it was because Jimmy Pamiotti was a nice guy. I checked this book out, and I do not regret it. It is an awesome, awesome book, and you should all be checking out All-Star Western. So that is going to be the new weekly long box official pick of the month.
Yay.
Yay.
You get to keep your kid. Because I was driving over in a minute if it wasn't a lane.
I was going to wait for him to brew a big one before I told you to come over and get him.
Okay. Maybe I won't come if I lost anyway.
So, that I think wraps up the books that we read from last week. Is that correct? Was there anything else that we missed?
No.
Okay. Well, what are we most looking forward to this week? I'll let you go first since mine is one that I already kind of tipped off from last week.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to trying the new Avengers book by Hickman. I loved his FF for the longest time, so I want to see what he can do with the new Avengers book.
For me, we're not adding anything new. I actually dropped some stuff, recently. I'm trying to pare down my list just a little bit. But this is a book that I've been getting for a very long time. I will continue to get. And, this is, we talked about it last week and the week before. If you read Amazing Spider-Man 698, and I even got a reference in to it on commentary, at the Chikara show this past week.
Awesome.
And, I did get a little negative blowback from some of the fans on Twitter watching the show, but I'll take it. I enjoyed the story very much, and I'm very much looking forward to see what happens next in issue 699, which comes out this week. Dan Slott himself said last issue was the magic trick. This is the revealing how the trick was done issue.
Yes, I'm picking this issue up also. As I said, Dan won me over. I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to stick around.
Yes, and I will mention about the, and I will mention to you off air after this issue, but I will give the PSA about the next issue to our listeners when it comes out to avoid any unnecessary accidental spending to new Spider-Man readers, of course.
Okay.
Cryptic messages there. So that's what we have looking forward to coming out this week. I will blow through the plugs here real quick as we get to the Twitter question from last week. And as I mentioned, Twitter, of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at Weekly Longbox. Todd and I are active there, as is the hub for all the latest and greatest news going on in the world of comics and all sorts of other related things. But as I always like to say, if you like that personal touch and would like to interact with Todd and I directly, you could follow me on Twitter at LF Chikarason, and that's LF, of course, Chikarason. Again, it was a busy weekend for me, but I do my best to try to answer everybody who tweets me. You could follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. That's Rowker the Joker on Twitter. And if you would like an even more personal touch, in our area, there is a comic book convention in Scranton on Saturday that Todd may be attending.
Yep, most likely, as long as nothing, derails my train, I'm going.
So again, it's not your San Diego's, it's not your New York's, it's not even your Philly's, but it's a nice little local con. I'm actually kind of sad they're not doing it on a Sunday. I might have been able to get away on a Sunday, but I can't get away on a Saturday this weekend. Mm-hmm.
And it all, the proceeds go to help J.K. Woodward.
Yes, and we had mentioned that last week, mm-hmm. Or a couple weeks ago when everything happened here in the Northeast with the hurricane and everything. He lost pretty much everything, and he is going to be at the show, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes, doing commissions. I think I'm getting another one.
Yes.
So
you can be up close and personal with Todd, and I will even say this, and we'll get into it with our Twitter questions, as we always like to mention the folks who get involved with us on Twitter. Jared Catherine, Jer Bear Stare, on Twitter mentioned that he has a book, I guess a creator-owned comic book that he is doing, involved in, writing or drawing, that he will have at the show, and I'm telling Todd on the show to pick that up for me.
Okay. Is that an order?
It's not an order. It's a polite request.
Gotcha. I'm on that. Maybe I'll get two.
Ooh, and maybe we'll even talk about it on the show next week.
Maybe. Strong maybes all around.
It'll have to be 2 weeks because I won't get it from you until next Wednesday.
I'll drive it down. I'll drive it down.
All right. Hand delivery.
Yes, with a smile.
You can also leave us a review on iTunes if iTunes is your desired method of obtaining our show. Leave us a review, 5 stars. The more positive reviews that we get, the more it fixes whatever the iTunes algorithm is. I don't know. I hate science, even though I have a super secret science job. I hate it. And you can write us a review like Chris Lariato did just recently. He said that he is a huge fan of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, which is the mothership. Very sad that this was not the monkeys episode, I was promised, but I'll wait till next week for that. But that's my own comment. So he gave this podcast a shot a year ago. Now, he has never read a comic book in his life, but he likes this podcast so much, it has given him insight to comics, and he has enjoyed picking up a few books, so we got him reading books. Leonard and Todd know what they are talking about. We have him fooled. And even if you don't like comics, give it a listen. You will love it. Funny and good interaction between these two. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much, Chris, for that awesome review. And if you are following us on Twitter, let us know who you are so I can give you your proper acknowledgement on Twitter as well.
Yes.
That was a very good review. So our Twitter question from last week, speaking of Twitter, was Todd's question that he had thought up, which was a favorite replacement hero or character even.
Yes.
I'm surprised we didn't get any villains.
I was too, because I was wondering if I worded it that it was only heroes, because there was a few like villains that you know, bopped around my mind.
Yes, Dave Howard, the rock out kid, mentioned Colossus becoming the Juggernaut. I guess that would be the closest. And maybe Michael Hanskar, longtime listener, mentioned the Visor Superman, the Eradicator, one of the 4 replacement Supermans. And that was, he was on my short list, actually, because I thought that was just like such a cool, like at the time I thought it was cool. And then now looking back at it, I'm like, you don't get much more 90s than that. I dig it.
I do, too. He wasn't on my short list, but I can understand why.
Yes. Some other ones that I'm upset that I didn't think of. Richard Strasberg mentioned Renee Montoya becoming the Question. I think it's just because she's not the Question anymore. And she didn't have a real long run as the Question that I think I probably forgot about that one.
Yep.
Robot Hammer on Twitter, and that's with an underscore in between those words, mentioned Guy Gardner. There was another Green Lantern replacement that was almost on my list, but Guy Gardner's a good one.
Okay.
I don't think of Guy, like, even though Guy Gardner's a Green Lantern, I don't think of him as a Green Lantern. I think of him as Guy Gardner.
I think of him as the way he thought of himself in, you know, when he first came back as a Green Lantern, the one true Green Lantern.
Well, like, Hal Jordan is a Green Lantern.
Right.
Okay. John Stewart, he's a Green Lantern. But Guy Gardner is Guy Gardner. Sinestro is Sinestro. I think they define themselves less the ring defining who they are.
That is deep.
Yes. Then we had some even more inspired choices. Kevin Hellions, Team Hellions on Twitter, mentioned all those times that Alfred disguised as Batman to kind of so that Batman and Bruce Wayne can appear in the same place. That happened a lot on the old 60s TV show, and I always got a kick out of that as a kid.
Yes, I love the thin, frail butler in the Batman costume. It was awesome.
And another inspired one was Mr. Senior, which is MRSR Living on Twitter, mentioned Mark Ruffalo taking over the Bruce Banner character in the Avengers movies franchise, and I think that's a great one as well.
It's an interesting choice, a movie choice.
Yes. We did have a lot of people pick, you know, some of the same ones. This is the one that I thought was going to be a layup. This was almost my choice. I changed it literally at the 11th hour. Burke Fournier and Thomas Gerke both mentioned Dick Grayson becoming Batman. And I'm disappointed in Ryan Fisher that he didn't choose this.
Mm.
He chose your favorite, which I know is your choice, which was John Seiler's choice, which was Alex Milko's choice, and that was Stephanie Brown Batgirl, because I know how much you love that.
Waffles.
So, Todd, I'm going to ask you. What were your, you know, I already mentioned who my two runner-ups were. Of course, you know, I had Sinestro in there. I had Visor Superman, the Eradicator in there. And then literally before I sent you the email today about the show, it was Dick Grayson Batman was my choice. But then I thought to myself, I'm a fool. So who's your choice, Todd?
My two side ones were Ted Kord, Blue Beetle.
I'm surprised he didn't get as much love. We only had one other person mention him, CM Towns, a longtime active listener.
The second runner-up tied with Ted was Jack Knight.
Yes.
But the only thing was I like when James Robinson wrote his father, Ted Knight, I liked them equally. So I didn't mm-hmm. like him better. But it comes down to a little guy who could. He played the character for as long as he could. Wally West is the Flash. He had a slight run that was okay there for a little bit. Just Wally West. I mean, he was the Flash for, like, you know, two decades almost.
Yes, and, you know, Noel Margate, a longtime listener, and Josh Savitsky, also another longtime listener, they had the same idea as you, as did I. When I was looking at the list, and as much as I like Dick Grayson being Batman, there is no better replacement. The best idea of a replacement is it makes you long for that person to be the character and makes you forget that there was ever anyone else as that character.
Exactly.
Wally West made me forget that there was ever any other Flash. He became my, and I know Todd as well, one and true Flash.
Yep. Though Jay was good, but he wasn't a replacement. He was the first.
Right. So Wally West is the winner. Please bring back Wally West. That's all I ask.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yes. So that is our Twitter question from last week. I have a Twitter question for this week. And this is one of the ones that I had on like my short list of questions to be asked when we very first started the show. And it just never came up because we always had other ideas and other things that popped up. Mm-hmm. And this one, I just need a little clarification on it when I tell you. This Twitter question for this week is the creator that you miss the most.
Okay.
The caveat that I mentioned here is, you know, obviously it would be someone who has not passed away. It is someone who is among us still, and they just don't write anything anymore. They don't draw anything anymore. They've pretty much fallen off the face of the earth, and they're one of those guys or gals that you wish would come back to comics.
That's a very interesting one, because I have to think who's gone away. That, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. who hasn't wrote or drawn something in a while. That's going to take me some time.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, who you miss. You know, maybe they do write, but not as often as they do. Well, or maybe they did, like, a fill-in issue, like, a year ago, and that was the first thing they did in 5 years, and you're just like, it was just like an appetizer to make you want more of this person to come back to comics full-time. So put on your thinking caps, everyone. Think back to who isn't around anymore and let us know who you miss the most.
That's a good one. That's a thinker.
It is a thinker. And just you can let us know by throwing the hashtag GrizzWLQ in there. It'll help us find it that much easier. But I'm sure as long as you at Weekly Long Box or myself or Todd, I'll be able to track them down, put the list together, and we'll go over it with a fine-tooth comb every week like we are wont to do.
Yes.
So, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap things up and put a nice little bow on this episode?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, for Todd, this is Leonard, and this is wrapping up episode 55 of the Weekly Long Box. We thank you all for listening, and we will catch you all here next week.